Blog Talk Radio.
This is the circus of Dr. Lowe. We show you things that you don't know. Oh, we spare no pains and we spare no dough. Oh, we want to give you one hell of a show. And youth may come and age may go, but no more circuses like this show.
Hey, Tony Randall, the great Tony Randall as Dr. Lowe. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I am accompanied by
Dave Bigler from Weirdness, Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And we are here with the lovely and very intelligent.
Thank you, thank you. I am your mistress of all the wonderful things that is Circus Circus. This is CW.
Yes, a ring mistress tonight. We are ring masters. She is the ring mistress. Because Eerie House Radio is a bit of a circus. Often.
A multi-circus.
Yep. If you took a look at the poster I made yesterday, it made you the ringmaster, Dave the strong man. I thought that was appropriate.
Oh, yeah, right.
The clown, and then there was me as the fool. Very appropriate as well. Whoever did that, I'm going to get him. Whoever did that, by gosh, I'm going to get him. That's all right. Make up for it with great. We'll make up for it with great radio tonight. CBS Radio Mystery Theater.
Ah, yes.
Here's another. We go all the way to 81. Of course, the show ended in 82, and go all the way back to 1981 for this.
Gee, that's only 42 years ago.
Oh,
what? What?
I feel old. I just depressed us. Good night, everybody. We're done. Killjoy,
well,
Dale Kay, strikes again.
Oh, no. Oh my God. Now that they're gone, I'll take over. Okay.
Atta girl. I like a good opportunist.
Go for the jugular.
Hey, if anybody could do it, if Dave and I suddenly croak, by all means, carry on. You and Gar,
please.
Carry on.
Sure, this is a memorial show for the two guys who just croaked, kicked off, kicked the bucket, pushing up Daisy's last roundup.
Dave,
well,
don't Dave, don't open any packages from CW.
Yeah, I just said it does not mean you're allowed to hire a hitman.
Yeah,
you know?
That's right.
Actually, at our age, you don't need a hitman. You need maybe a dozen glazed donuts.
Oh,
that would be all it would take to finish.
That's all it would take for me. I'd be done. Frickin' diabetic seizure for me.
Oh, jeez. I'm just curious. Since it is the season for the pumpkin patch reason, is anyone as goofy as so many people are for pumpkin spice? And you have, it's a Forrest Gump thing: pumpkin latte, pumpkin cappuccino, pumpkin
and shrimp.
Cafe au lait, pumpkin and shrimp.
Yeah. That's right. Not really. The only pumpkin I like is pumpkin pie.
Yeah, I like pumpkin in with some things a little bit. Gets you a little bit of that spice there, but no, I just had to, believe it or not, the wife just picked up some apple pumpkin donuts, and I did have one. So, yeah.
That could be interesting.
It gives it a bit of a kick. Yes, it does.
The only thing I really look forward to is when I get the jack-o'-lantern and gouge out all the internals.
Yes, there is something satisfying about that part of it.
I see that large, huge chef knife go. And
there's a great meme where somebody takes the pumpkin with the face, and it looks like a horrible face, like it's retching, and they have all the guts coming out of its mouth. hanging over the porcelain receptacle like it's the day after a party. Oh, poor pumpkin.
That's a good one. Or if you have the chop off part of a denim pair of jeans, stuff it, and then you have a boot attached to it and stick it in the mouth.
Oh, there you go. Like you've been eating somebody. There you go.
Yeah.
I like it.
But the pumpkin seeds, you put those on a cookie sheet with some little bit of kosher salt.
Yep.
And real, break the piggy bank, real creamy butter, real butter, and you put that under the broiler for just a touch. And
like Kerrygold. Kerrygold is good butter.
I've heard that's supposed to be fabulous.
It is fabulous. It's also expensive, but it's fabulous.
Yeah. I try and go local, but I've always wanted to try Kerry Butter. By the way, if anyone from the Kerry Butter Corporation, we are available for advertisement. Hello, Kerry Butter.
Yeah, you owe us a few bucks. About $1.98
each. There you go.
I grew up on that margarine stuff. Yeah.
I did too. It was butter at first, then they made a switch. Everybody went on this margarine kick. No, not a fan. I'm back to butter.
I like olive oil, to be perfectly frank. Drizzling some olive oil, which is not inexpensive, even if you get the store brand. But I do like olive oil.
It's great for a lot of things. It depends what I'm making. Some things that require butter, I like butter in lieu of margarine. But there are some things absolutely got to have olive oil. I like making salads with olive oil for the oil instead of corn oil or something. Lucky.
Garlic infused olive oil. I'm literally rich. Garlic with a little bit of fresh tarragon in there, and some other herbs, and you infuse it and let it sit overnight, and then you just baste whatever on your veggies before you put them under the broiler. Bubble, toil,
or,
and trouble.
I like to take a teacup saucer, all right, pour some olive oil in there, put some fresh basil, if I have some fresh basil, a wee bit of oregano, maybe even a wee bit of rosemary, and then just dip some really good fresh bread in there. Baked bread, not like this Wonder Bread stuff. I mean, really, bread. That's some good eating right there.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the Eerie House ASMR Cooking Show.
That's right. And what we got cooking is another program regarding the circus.
Yes.
CBS
or
Radio
at least Circus
Mystery Theater from 1981, Dave says.
Yeah, at least circus performers. These are some circus performers trying to get out of the circus with a real type job, which is never considered a real type job, what they're going after.
Yep, and it's entitled, if I'm pronunciating this right, Diogenes Inc.
Closer than I came. Good job.
All right. Looked Greek. I don't know.
Well, it's all Greek to me.
Yep. Anyway, what is the original broadcast date of this gem, Dave?
This gem is episode number 1197 and comes to us from May 13th of 1980 and one.
Ooh.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents.
The trigger finger got rusty.
Hi, Bob.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. I'm coming to the point right away. Diogenes Incorporated, today's case file, is a mystery story. It's not so much a whodunit as a how did he do it, which means if the stories of detection are your dish, You may know the who, but you won't rest easy till you know the how. Lisa, when the smoke clears, I'm putting together another great show under the big top.
Will you, Max? Such a terrible fire. Max, do you know what I'm going to miss the most? I had a little trapeze rigged up in my tent to show the kids how an aerialist trains. I'll miss those little ones.
You'll be doing the high wire again for children and everybody. I have a lot of money coming to me. And I'll have a new show and a new star. You, Lisa. Our mystery drama, Diogenes Incorporated, based on a tale by Jacques Futrelle, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by James Agate Jr. and stars Jack Grimes and Evie Juster. I shall return shortly with Act One. Only Max Maximus would have the nerve to call his small touring carny the Circus Maximus after Julius Caesar's favorite entertainment center, which seated 150,000 spectators. But then, Max was a pretty nervy fella, and grasping and a bully and downright indifferent to anyone's safety if it meant squeezing an extra dollar into his pocket. So it's not surprising that during a matinee performance under the big top, that this happened.
By this way, kids. All you little guys, that's right, keep in line. Don't push this. Plenty of time, no danger. Everybody get out in plenty of time.
Thelma, what are you doing?
Tearing down the burning canvas so the animal cages won't catch fire. Max, give me a hand. Help me.
I'm on my hands and knees, thanking the Lord this was a children's matinee and only 50 kids were here.
You wouldn't have to be praying if you'd fireproof the tent. Help me.
Thelma, stop what you're doing. You'll get hurt. Where am I going to get another strong woman?
I don't know, Max. You better first get yourself another circus.
Lisa, may I come in? It's Max.
Max, I just don't feel like talking right now. Can't it wait until tomorrow?
No, it can't. I have to come in.
All right. It was so awful to see everything go up in smoke. Like being at one's own funeral.
My dearest girl, that's not the end of the great aerialist Lisa Lamont.
I feel as if my net were taken away forever. What is going to happen now? It is all gone?
Yep. Thank heavens I carry insurance.
No, I don't mean money. I mean the canvasmen, the Razorbacks, all those guys. And the ring stock.
Everybody got away and the animals are safe. Nobody was hurt.
You can thank Selma for pulling down the burning pieces. And Half Pint. Wasn't he marvelous? The way he let all the kids out. Oh, where is Half Pint?
I don't know. This place is his hometown.
You mean here? In Plymouth City? He was born here?
That's right.
Of all the luck, he has it.
What do you mean?
He has a home. It's right here. Max, I feel so far away from Bavaria. Mountains, trees, snow.
There are places like that in America. Not far from here, too. White Mountains. Lisa, I want you to do me a favor.
Of course I will. What?
Take this briefcase and hide it. Tomorrow sometime I'll come for it. I have to go back to the lot now.
What happens then, tomorrow?
I'll decide then. Now I must go and pay everybody off. It's the last getaway day for some time. But I'll put another big top together.
Will you, Max?
The next one's going to be bigger and better. Until I'm set, you'll get another job with the show.
Oh, I don't know. They're not so easy to find these days.
Don't you worry. I got a lot of money coming to me. Fire insurance. And I have a brand new big top and a new star. You, Lisa.
Yeah, it sure looks like midnight on the battlefield out here, Selma. Some of that canvas is still smoldering.
If I didn't say it before, Alfredo, I'll say it now. You may be half the size of most men around here, but you're twice as brave. I saw what you did this afternoon, making sure every child and his mama or grandma got safely out of the tent.
You're throwing me a bouquet, Selma? You who stopped the fire from spreading to the animal cages by ripping down the camp?
I didn't know I was that strong. The truth is, I was frightened, silly. I knew Max hadn't fireproofed the canvas. How he got away with that, I don't know. You and I are some team.
You know, why is it that me, Alfredo Pinto, 4 feet two, have got to be in love with Selma Sylvester, 6 foot four, is something I'll never figure.
Am I complaining that you're a midget? You've got giant brains.
Alfredo Pinto the Clown, otherwise known as Half Pipe.
Do you think it's so charming to be Lady Hercules and bend iron bars for a living?
Why do we have to go on doing it?
Did I ever tell you that my dad is a very rich man? And it was because he was ashamed of my size that I ran away from home?
Well, my freaky size didn't help me much either. I wonder what Max is going to do now.
Well, what can you do with 3 moth-eaten camels, 2 mangy lions, a splotchy zebra, and a barrel full of monkeys? Maybe start a flea circus.
You'll have a good whack at collecting insurance.
Suppose they find out nothing was fireproof.
Then he's got a problem. Now, what about you, Selma? You going home?
I'm not that desperate. And you, with all those degrees, you could become a teacher.
Well, I was once going to be one, Selma. 5 years training in psychology. But I couldn't get a job teaching because of my size. Yeah, it was quite a blow. Then I started a book on the psychology of circus performers. Met Max, became a clown, and stayed with it.
Am I glad you did.
Selma, why don't you go into business with me?
What can we do together besides 2-story jobs?
Oh.
Me to smash down the back door and you to crawl into tight places?
You know, it's funny you should say that.
Us turn crooked? You're kidding.
No, not being criminals, but catching criminals.
Team us as private eyes? I don't know beans about detective work.
Well, neither do I, but we learn as we go along. There's one thing we've got going for us.
We're not expensive.
Nah, we've got brains. You've also got a little brawn, which doesn't hurt.
You really think I've got brains?
Well, sure. Why else would you jump at the chance to go into business with me? Well, Selma, how do you like it? Not bad, huh? Nice little office, telephone, file cabinet. And look what I just picked up at the printer's. Our business notepaper.
Oh, that's pretty. But what is that in the left corner? That drawing of a man in a toga carrying a lantern?
Oh, you like that? I drew it myself. It's our logo, our trademark.
Well, what does it mean? He looks like some ancient Greek.
He is an ancient Greek. Diogenes.
Oh, no kidding. Diogenes.
Well, isn't that a great idea? It shows right away what business we're in.
Oh, it sure does.
Of course, not all our clients are going to be as hip to history as we are.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, they won't make the connection with Diogenes going around the streets of his hometown with that lantern looking for an honest man. That's why I thought Diogenes Incorporated. Truth Finders was an ideal name for the agency. Oh, excuse me. Diogenes Incorporated.
Is this where I can locate Alfredo Pinto?
Are you speaking to him? Who's this?
Pinto? What's this Diogenes thing?
What's the name of my new business?
I didn't realize you were still in town till someone told me they saw you on the street.
I recognize your voice, but I don't connect it with a face. Who is this, please?
Police Chief Maloney. One of your biggest fans, Half Pint.
Maloney, of course. Say no more. But what can I do for you, Chief?
Pinto, can you come down to the station house? I want to ask you a couple of questions.
No. I got a better idea. Why don't you come up here? I want you to see the place. Meet my partner.
As off duty.
You just come anytime. We'll be here.
Selma, it's a pleasure to meet you. I've never shaken hands with a Lady Hercules before. Easy now.
Pleased to meet you.
So, you like the setup, huh?
Well, now, I may be able to throw Diogenes Incorporated into business. That's why I wanted to see you. What do you know about that fire at Max's circus?
Well, I don't know there's much I can tell you, Chief. Now, most of the acts left town, you know, tried to find work elsewhere. But Plymouth City's my home, so Selma and I decided to stay.
Well, the insurance company gave us a call from Hartford. It seems old Maxie tried to hit them for fire insurance.
Uh-oh.
Would we help check him out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we did. And we found he's got a record as long as your arm.
I didn't know that.
Oh, nothing serious, but a lot of counts. Did you know that, Miss Sylvester?
No. The only person who knew Max really well was Lisa Lamont, the aerialist. Well, she's known Max for years.
Lisa? She could be his daughter.
And I wanted to talk to you, Alfredo, because I thought with your connections you could find out what Max is up to and where he is.
When he put in for his insurance claim, didn't he give them an address?
No, he said he'd be in touch. See, there's more to this than a showman who skipped town. The entire week's box office receipts disappeared.
Oh, did you check the white wagon? That's the circus ticket office.
There's nothing left of it.
Well, the money could have burned with it.
Well, we found the safe. It was fireproof, but empty.
Well, it was his, wasn't it?
Well, the mayor's wife bought out two whole nights for the Ladies' Aid Society. They gave Max $1,000. And since there was no show, the mayor asked me to get the money back.
But she said there was no money.
Yeah, and no Max.
So you can't ask me to help find him. If I do, Chief, I should say if we do, it's 20% of what we recover. Finder's fee.
All right. It's a deal. There's another reason we want to catch up with Max.
And what's that?
We've got a witness who says he saw Max put a blowtorch to the side of the tent.
Oh, I don't believe it. Max would never do that.
We've got the blowtorch.
Well, so what? That's how we give the old bulls a shave before the show. Makes them look pretty.
What old bulls?
The elephants.
Chief, what Alfredo means is we use a blowtorch to singe the scraggly hairs under the elephant's trunks. To clean them up.
Chief, I think you put two and two together and come up with the wrong answer.
Well, you just find me Max Maximus. I'll see that two and two makes four.
Well, if that's the answer, it's the wrong answer. Max loved his circus.
Could be, but I think he loved money more.
Time, there were hundreds of small circuses like Max's crisscrossing America. Most of them were on the up and up. In fact, Max Maximus is about the first true trickster I've run across. Now it looks like Max is in on the run. Let's see how far he gets before I return to you with Act Two.
And we'll be presenting that Act Two in just a little bit. As we explore the first part of this show. It sounds like it's one of those small time circuses.
Yeah. It's not the big time.
Yeah. Exactly. More like a side.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. What is he? More like a sideshow almost.
Yeah.
Except they didn't have the aerialist, so they did have a big top.
Yep. Everybody's waiting for him to fall.
that's one thing I could never do. Could never do that. I'm not real good with heights, and the older I get, the more problem I have with heights.
I was the same. I was almost fearless as a youth, and now it's like, yeah, no, I'm not doing this. That's stop. No, I'm not doing that. I'm a ladder.
Actually, it was the opposite. I couldn't stand heights as a child. I mean, my parents literally had to pick me up to even use the escalator. It was really sad.
But now you've...
Oh, yeah.
That's just skydiving, hang gliding.
Can you use the escalator? No problem.
Oh, not at all. I mean, you know, the higher you go, the better the Wi-Fi. You know, you see me scrambling on roofs.
Like Spider Woman.
Yeah. Don't mind me. I'm just, you know, right here putting up my antenna on the roof. Just ignore me.
Friendly neighborhood Wi-Fi pirate. Yay!
Arg. Arg. There she blow. Oh, www.highfidelitywifi.com. Arg.
Feeling this high seas of radio waves.
I'm to the point if I look at one of those pictures where you like the guy sitting on that steel girder high up on the high rise they're building, yeah, having their lunch, I get nervous.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. The steel workers. Talk about daredevil. I mean, even with a safety belt, can you imagine one slip and you're just dangling? Hey, oh, no, my sandwich. I lost my Dagwood sandwich. Somebody save my Dagwood.
I understand there are certain groups of Native Americans that, or shall I say, indigenous folk, that did a lot of that work on bridges and high rises. For some reason, certain tribes have like no natural fear of height at all.
Yes, and no.
It was basically because, they were up there because, first of all, they needed the work.
Well, yeah.
And as to the mythos, I think they just encouraged the myth so they could, you know, get ahead of the game and get more work. For Fogs, our Colstrat the Night Stalker aficionado, remember the episode with Kolchak?
Building the hospital.
Exactly. The actor, the late William Smith, who was the indigenous, played the indigenous head boss of all the contractors, the steel workers, that ties into what you're thinking, Dale.
Yep. I believe Chief Dan George, who you know, became an actor very late in life. Earlier in his life, he did, I can't recall if it was tree work or construction work way up in the air. And I love Chief Dan George. He's great. He had just some of the greatest roles. In Outlaw Josie Wales,
cool.
He was in
Little Big Man. Was me?
Yes, that was him. Old Oddskins. Great character. Actor.
Absolutely.
And very lovable. Yeah, lovable like this story, Diogenes Inc. from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Here is part two.
Yay!
We were talking about Max Maximus, who may or may not have set fire to his own circus, and who may or may not have absconded with a week's bankroll, or BR, as circus people call it. Some disagreement there, but none about Max being a real hogger, which in circus lingo means a greedy showman. This was Diogenes Incorporated's first case. Find Max and recover the money. This is how they went about it.
It'll work. I tell you, Mr. Pomfret, it'll work. I know him.
But it's a big risk, Mr. Pinto. Right now, we just turn the claim down and we risk nothing. Why get ourselves involved?
Because a big insurance company like yours hates to see anyone try to get away with anything.
Yeah, well, that's true. We'd like to pin his ears back.
Well, it's more than that. If you give us a hand in catching Max, you'll be helping every other insurance company he might try to cheat one day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I say we've got to catch the man. So, let's have a go at it.
That's the spirit. Did you bring it?
Have it right here.
Mm-hmm.
Check made out for $100,000 to Max Maximus.
A check. That's the problem. I don't know if he'll accept a check.
Well, he has to. His claim for $100,000 represents reimbursement for a total loss under his policy. No insurance company pays off in cash.
Well, how is he going to cash it?
You can go to his bank, I suppose. Wait till it clears. When it does, we nab him.
Yeah, but Max is also wanted for absconding with a week's box office receipts before the fire. The police in Plymouth City are going to alert all the banks.
Yeah, that's your problem. We've gone as far as okaying his claim, and we'll send him by registered mail the check for $100,000. And the moment he turns it into cash, we can turn around and have him stopped for fraud on the basis that he knew his tents were not fireproofed.
Okay, send it to him. Here's the address of the hotel he's staying at till Wednesday. Now mail the check today and leave the rest to Diogenes Incorporated.
We'll give you 5 days' grace. Remember, Mr. Pinto, you are baiting that hook with our $100,000. If Maximus turns it into cash and skips the country...
I know. It won't look so good on your record.
On my record? Mr. Pinto, I'll be out of the insurance business forever.
Hello, Lisa.
Hi, honey. However did you find me?
Well, I said to myself, where would Lisa, the superb aerialist, be working? Two places. A circus or with children. Now, there are no show openings this time of the year, so where would she go work with children? The White Mountains, I said to myself. It looked more like home to her.
But you find me here.
Well, the only nursery school in 100 miles. I took a chance.
Oh, you are a master detective, Huffpint.
Well, I hope so.
I am so happy here. You cannot imagine.
You don't miss the high wires?
No.
And Max?
Why do you talk about him?
Well, I thought you were interested in him. I know he was interested in you.
I don't wish to think about him.
Lisa, do you know we took a lot of money from the office safe the night of the fire? That he disappeared and never paid anyone off?
I didn't know that.
He may have even been responsible for the fire to collect the insurance. So whatever you know, you ought to tell me.
Why, you have time. You're not with the police.
Here's my card. My new business. Now read what it says.
Diogenes Incorporated. We seek the truth for you.
It's a detective agency. Selma is in it with me.
Selma? Our Selma? Lady Hercules?
The one and only. Now, we want to see the money gets back to the people who deserve it. Can you help us find the truth?
I knew nothing about the fire, Half-Pint. But I did keep a briefcase for Max overnight, and it did have money in it. I saw it.
Lisa, would you be willing to swear to that in the court if you had to?
But I don't know that Max stole it.
It wasn't his. It was the week's take. All I'm asking is that you tell the truth.
There was money in the briefcase. A lot of it. I'll tell the truth, of course.
That's all I'm asking. It'll be up to the prosecutor to make Max tell where he got it.
You Max Maximus?
Yes, I am.
Got a registered letter for you. Sign here.
Wait a minute. It's not a summons or something. Who's it from?
Some insurance company in Hartford.
Oh, yes. I've been expecting that. Here, I've got a pen.
Thank you, Mr. Maximus. Have a good day.
You're welcome. What? Selma? What brings you here? Oh, it's good to see you. Come in. Selma, of all people. You know, I was thinking of you.
I was thinking about you too, Max.
I was going to get in touch with you. How'd you find me?
Oh, it wasn't too hard.
You working? You doing your strong act anywhere? Oh, I can't tell you how great it is to see a friend from the old days. You got to have a drink with me to celebrate. I'm only staying in this hotel till tomorrow. Hey, let me show you around.
This is a fancy suite.
And see here, behind the sofa, that door opens. And lo and behold, a completely stocked bar. What do you think of that?
Wow. Must be in the chips, Max.
Yeah, not in the big money, but I will be. Max always travels first class. Selma, it won't be long before old Maxie will have a fat bankroll to put together a bigger show than he's ever had before. You know, I always liked you a lot, Selma. You were different from the others.
What about Lisa?
Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
What made you think of her?
You used to like her a lot, too. Do you see her?
No. But Lisa treats me like I ran a dog and pony show. Anyway, Selma, I liked you better. As a person, I mean.
Oh, I didn't know that. Where is she?
Oh, Lisa?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? She went off looking for some spot that reminded her of Bavaria. She's given up the business. And what are we talking about her for, anyway? Look, I got a bottle here in the icebox I'm going to open. Any particular kind of wine you like, Selma?
Whatever pours easily.
How about champagne?
Champagne? What are you launching?
You'd be surprised. I was going to drink this by myself to celebrate this letter. Didn't you see the mailman pass you in the hall? I'll show you. To us, Max and Selma.
What are we drinking to?
I'll put my glass down and open the envelope. A check made out to Max Maximus for $100,000. And that's where you come in. Oh, it's fate, I mean it. I wanted to call you about this, and here you are.
What can I do?
You, Selma Sylvester, are going to help me turn this little piece of paper into cash. Bills. Green bills.
Yeah, all right. Don't anyone get excited. I just want to know exactly what happened so that my company can take the proper legal action. Now, you first, Miss Sylvester.
Mr. Pomfret, I obeyed my instructions.
You which were?
To assist Max Maximus to cash your insurance check.
Which Selma did, perfectly.
How perfectly?
I arrived at Max's hotel the morning he got your check. I took him to my father's bank, told the vice president I wanted the check okayed. Father's the biggest stockholder in that bank, and the vice president has known me since I was a baby, so no problem. Max endorsed it, vice president countersigned it, and the check was cashed. All small bills. Nothing larger than a 50. It took a little time.
And that was 3 days ago.
How'd you know that? We called you. You gave us 5 days. Now, we did it in three. One, actually. Of course, there'll be some delay.
What do you mean?
Well, it hasn't gone exactly as we hoped.
Max told me to get in touch with him in 24 hours. That he had a line on a circus that's in trouble, and he and I would go out and buy it. The whole shebang. From hook ropes to handlers.
We?
Well, I was to be his star attraction.
Oh, and where is this circus that he was going to buy?
Mexico City.
Yeah, things were working out nicely. Here, he's using money that wasn't really his. We'd have him dead to rights.
And you were to call him...
The day before yesterday.
And she did. No answer.
I went around to his hotel. He checked out.
If he skipped to Mexico City with our money, I'm holding you responsible, Mr. Pinto.
Now, don't talk like that. You gave us 5 days.
I must have been crazy dealing with you people just because Chief Maloney told me Diogenes Incorporated would be perfect.
You're not making sense, Mr. Pomfret, so don't get angry. Max has done nothing wrong. He made a claim and you paid it.
You said you'd catch him.
And so we will. And when we do, we'll slap him down for taking money under false pretenses. You found nothing was fireproofed. So his insurance didn't cover.
Yeah, that's better, Mr. Pinto. That's what I like to hear. But, supposing he sinks it all into a Mexican circus, how am I going to liquidate that?
He's not going to buy that circus. That was an act to get Selma to help him cash the check. He's got all the cash he needs now for a permanent vacation.
Oh. So what's the next step?
Max is booked on the 6 p.m. tonight to Mexico City. Alfredo and I are going down to the airport to wave goodbye.
Hello, Max. Fine. What are you doing here? Well, we came down to see you off, but we decided we'd miss you too much. I wouldn't make a run for it, Max. That's the chief of police right behind you.
Cut and dried, Alfredo. You got the evidence so well wrapped up, I wasn't surprised they'd booked Max into a slammer for a long stay. Arson, theft, and fraud. They got him on all counts. Of course, Max will appeal.
Appeal?
You mean pretend he didn't know that he was collecting insurance by issuing false statements that his tents were fireproof?
That kind don't give up so easily. That's what I'm saying, Alfredo.
Yes, Mr. Pumford, I can hear. We got a little storm up here, but the phone's working okay. No, Alfredo's not here. Well, I'll certainly tell him. He'll be very pleased.
Ah, Selma? What a miserable night. Soaked.
Mr. Pumford, wait a minute. Alfredo's just come in. Darn it, he's hung up.
Oh, who has?
Her client.
Hmm?
Max's appeal was thrown out of court, so he stays in the slammer. 7 years. I wonder how long he'll serve.
Well, I think what cinched it was Lisa's testimony about seeing that $5,000 in his briefcase.
Well, what about the witness I dug up who saw Max start the fire?
Well, you made Diogenes Incorporated very proud. You're not going home in this weather. You'll never get a cab.
Who takes cabs? I can still make the last bus.
Now, you're not going out in that, and that's final.
Yes, boss.
Selma, I saw Chief Maloney tonight. He's come up with another case for us. Some sure thing men are muscling in the church bingo games.
Professional gamblers here in Plymouth City?
Uh-huh. So I don't want anything to happen to you now. Now, look, you take my bedroom upstairs. I'll sleep down here on the couch. Diogenes Incorporated is just getting off to a good start. Who's there? Who is it? Who are you? What are you doing in here? Where are you?
Alfredo, what is it? What's the matter down there? Alfredo, I'm coming. Are you all right? Oh, where's the light switch? Alfredo, what is it? What happened?
Uh-oh.
As long as former clown Alfredo Pinto could use his brain to further his new profession, sleuthing was a job with a future. But the moment somebody started to beat on his head, the future became questionable. All of which gave Diogenes Incorporated food for thought and a giant headache. I shall return shortly with Act 3.
And we'll be here for that too, won't we?
We will.
We will, we will. You can't get rid of us now.
Nope. We are always here.
We're just waiting for the British chick to tell us we're on all the time, and it just only happens twice a week.
Yep.
That's right. And hopefully they won't let us go on a hot mic again.
Yeah.
But that didn't get rid of gosh.
Yep. So, this plot is thickening, all right?
Yeah, curiouser and curiouser.
Indeed. Yep.
And, of course, we have the dark, stormy night was thrown in as well.
Well, you can't not have that. You
know. Nope.
Can't not have a dark, stormy night.
This was a good angle for our topic this weekend, Dave. These are circus workers. Rather
yeah,
than the circus itself. Pretty cool.
It's a unique story to be sure. Circus workers turn detectives. Why not?
Why not?
Absolutely. Now that's an incredible twist.
That's right. We'll solve your mystery shortly.
Shortly. First of all, we have to ride the elephants. Then we have to have the dogs do their loop-de-loop through the hoops.
Yep.
And then we have to do our high wire act. Popcorn, peanuts. Anyone? Anyone? Cotton candy.
Kielbasa.
Kielbasa.
Yeah. Well, certainly.
Elephant ears. Don't forget your elephant ears.
You always have kielbasa at the... At the circus in Poland. In Parma.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
There you go. There you go. There's the...
It's
a Parma Calliope music.
But you've got that wonderful delicacy, the dill piccolo stick.
Mm-mm.
If he had a dill pickle on the stick.
I was going to say, if he had a voice, I wonder what he'd sound like. The pickle on a stick.
I think it might sound something like this. Depends on where you put that stick, but...
Wow. It sounds kind of painful. Wherever he has
it. It'll be a little higher if you stuck it somewhere else. But anyway.
Wow, Dave. Wow.
Oh, Dave. Oh. PG. Keep it PG-13, please.
I'm shocked.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Could be worse. Oh. Could be telling Christmas stories. Oh. But I digress.
Oh, my gosh. Where's my fainting couch? I'm clutching my pearl.
There you go. Anyhow, this is getting down to the nitty-gritty. I wonder if they will solve this. Well, they've probably got about 15 minutes and 18 seconds to solve it, I would say, roughly.
I would say so. Otherwise, there'd be another part there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'll have some time for some extra stuff, huh?
Yes.
We got stuff.
Woo-hoo!
So
extra.
Let's get to it, and we'll wrap it up with Diogenes Inc. from CBS Radio Mystery Theater way back in 1981.
Persons in the world you'd expect to partner in a detective agency would be an ex-clown and an ex-strongwoman. Yet, that's exactly what the Lady Hercules and Half Pint have done. Their first case against Crooked Max Maximus, they thought, was behind them, with Max safely in jail. Or was he?
How do you feel now, Alfredo?
Oh, okay. Glad I've got a hard head. Oh, I gotta make a phone call.
It's 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Yes, sure you're all right. Oh, I'm glad I was around.
Information? Yes, please. I want the number of the warden's office at the state penitentiary.
Oh, I wish you'd lie down. I can call the cops about that burglar.
He was no burglar, Selma. Yes, operator? 555-7272? Thank you.
Why are you calling the warden? Call Chief Maloney. He's the one.
No, just be patient, Selma, and listen, okay? Okay. Hello, Warden. I'm sorry to disturb you at this ungodly hour. This is Alfredo Pinto of Diogenes Incorporated. No, sir, you don't know me, but we did investigative work on the Max Maximus case. Yes, sir. Can you tell me if Max Maximus is in a cell? Yes, now. I mean, right now. Max Maximus, you've had him at State Pen for about 90 days. Are you sure? Yeah, tonight? Well, what time? Well, if you say so. I'm sorry I got you out of bed, Warden.
Would you mind telling me what that was all about?
Well, I don't know how he did it, but he's done it. The warden says Max is in his cell and was checked in by the guards at midnight and at 3 a.m.
Of course he is. He's got 7 years to go.
Selma, he is nuts. Max has somehow escaped. I know it.
What do you mean you know it?
Max was in this house tonight. I know that man so well that one whiff is enough. He's the one who tried to kill me, and he would have too, but in the dark I rolled out of his way.
Now, tomorrow morning, I'm getting Chief Maloney to introduce me a little more formally to the warden.
Warden, I'd like you to meet Alfredo Pinto.
Oh, pleased to meet you, sir.
Pinto? Are you the fellow who called me up in the middle of the night? Something to do with Diogenes?
Well, that's the name of our detective agency.
Maloney, what is this? Does he work with the police?
I sure do. I helped to get the evidence against Max.
That's what you woke me up about, wasn't it? You asked if Maximus was still in his cell. Well, he was then, and he is right now.
I wonder, sir, if I could see the man.
Why not? If my word's not good enough for you.
No. That's got nothing to do with it. Just a few things I'd like to ask the prisoner myself. One question, Warden. In the 3 months that Max has been here, has he had any visitors?
Let me check my book.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I see that a lady called Lisa Lamont has... Oh, yeah. She's been a regular visitor.
Hmm.
I don't know what you're after, Mr. Pinto, but I can tell you this. If all our prisoners were as cooperative and quiet as Mr. Maximus, we wouldn't need high walls and guards and dogs.
Hello, Max. You mind if I sit down? No. How's Lisa? Okay. Does she visit you? Yeah. Well, how often? When she can. Once a week, twice a week, once a month? What do you care, I find? You're out there. I'm in here. Well, don't you think you deserve to be where you are? Setting fire to the tent, stealing the whole box office, not paying anyone off, trying to get away with $100,000? Why don't you go away and leave me alone? Who do you associate with here in Max? Broad tossers, cappers?
Oh?
Sure thing, man?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You know, my friend, you might just be telling the truth. I don't think you'd know a grease joint from a grouch bag.
Guard! Guard! Get this man out of here. He's bothering me. I don't want to talk to him.
Just a moment, guard. Are these your shoes, Max?
Guard, will you get him out?
All right. Oh, very nice leather. I didn't realize they let you wear your own shoes in prison.
What's all the racket?
Oh, hiya, Chief. I think I found out what I wanted to know. Let's go back upstairs and say goodbye to your friend, the warden. Now, warden, I just stopped by to thank you.
Well, are you satisfied that Maximus is still behind bars?
You were saying before, warden, that Max was a model prisoner?
A big improvement since he first came, yes. It could have been that lady who came to see him. I don't know. Calmed him down. When he first came here, he was a real unpleasant customer. He swore his head off at everybody, the guards, me in particular.
And you noticed an improvement as soon as he had a regular lady visitor?
Almost immediately. He didn't swear at me when I passed his cell. I thought that was unusual.
Well, anything else unusual you've observed lately?
Well, I don't know if it is to you, but it sure is to me. After lights out, I make a round to the cell blocks. Every night, I'd walk along block 4 and pass cell 97. I'd see Max on his knees, praying.
Well, that doesn't sound like the Max I know. Warden, I don't know who it is you've got in cell 97, but the Max I know and worked for, that man hasn't been in your penitentiary for weeks. Good night, sir. No question, Selma. It's not Max up at the state pen.
But you say he looks just like him, talks just like him?
Almost, but not quite. Something's off. He doesn't think like Max, not the Max we've been on the road with. When I asked him if he ran around with Kappas and Sure Thing Man, he said he didn't know what I was talking about.
Well, what does that prove? Why should he tell you if he hangs out with gamblers in prison? Alfredo. Why in the world would a man who has every reason to hate your guts, a man who you helped put behind bars for 7 years, level with you or even answer you?
Somewhere there's a key to this. Lisa Lamont. I found her once before. I can do it again.
You think she'll speak to you?
Yeah, that's what doesn't make sense. She gives evidence at the trial against Max and then goes visiting him in prison. Unless the man she's visiting is not Max.
Okay. Okay, for the sake of argument, they've got somebody else behind bars. Now, why would anybody in their right mind change places with a man doing 7 years? And a man who actually talks and looks like Max? Now, where would he come from? Why?
Well, that, Selma, is something I haven't figured out yet. Excuse me, but are you in charge of this playground?
No, I'm not. I'm the custodian of the building, so they asked me to keep an eye open so the children don't get into any trouble.
Well, didn't you used to have a young woman in charge of the playground, Lisa Lamont?
Lisa, yes, yes. She just ran out on us one day, and we haven't been able to get a replacement.
Well, you don't happen to know her address, do you?
Sure do. I know it by heart. Are you a friend of hers?
A very old friend. Hello, Lisa.
Alfredo. Oh, go away. Go away, please.
No. I'm not going away. I'm inside and I'm staying here. You might just as well shut the door.
Listen to me, Half Pint. Alfredo, please. He's coming back and he'll kill you.
Who?
Max.
Why do you stay with him?
I can't tell you now. Oh, please go. You don't know what he's like. It's like a nightmare.
If it is a nightmare, Lisa, then wake up. Wake up. Max is supposed to be in prison and you know it. If he's really out and has some hold over you, at least tell me what it is so I can help.
Max, don't! Max, stop! Are you all right?
Well, this is the only disadvantage of being a midget.
I am supposed to lock you up, but I can't. Max has gone crazy.
Well, he must be. All he's got on his record now is theft, fraud, arson, and prison escape. Why does he want to add murder?
He doesn't know what he's doing. He wants revenge on you and Selma, and he'll stop at nothing.
Now, where did he go now? To get a trunk?
How did you know?
Well, it figures. He wouldn't even have to cut me up. Lisa, why are you helping him?
I have to. I owe it to him.
Did you have to visit him in prison?
That wasn't me.
What? Oh, hello, Max. You can put that pistol away. If you fire it, they'll get you this time, and no twin brother is going to take your place in cell 97.
Lisa?
I didn't tell him. I swear it.
You're all related, aren't you? Lisa, you, Max, and the man in cell 97.
I don't want to hear any more.
Uncle Max, don't do it.
No, Uncle Max. Is the gun loaded?
You shut up.
Well, it won't fire like that. You have to pull a safety catch down. Well, you know where it is, behind the trigger.
Oh, you think I won't, huh?
Well, that's the ticket. Now aim the pistol carefully. A finger on the trigger.
Get away from that window, Half Pint.
Oh, I'm just taking a last look at the sky and the streets. Hey, Max, your hand is waving all over the place. I don't think you've got the right killer. Selma, let go of me.
Drop that gun.
Selma, you're breaking my neck. Now, Warden, how does it feel to have the real Max back in a cell? Oh, have you released that man in cell 97?
He's on his way here now. Come in. Oh, thanks, Jim. Well, whoever you are, what were you doing in cell 97?
I'm Max's brother, Paul. I'm a minister. Max asked me to take his place here for a few weeks, and, well, I couldn't refuse him.
So, to set it up, you'd visit him each week dressed as a woman. You wore a wig. You signed in as Lisa Lamont. And one day, you were permitted into a cell. You changed places, and Max walked out in your costume.
I couldn't refuse him. It was Max who helped me and my niece escape from Germany. Originally, we were three brothers, Max, myself, and Lisa's father. My wife and Lisa's mother and father were killed. Max saved Lisa and me. So, when he got into this trouble and he said he needed a few weeks to do something, how could I not change places with him?
You had no idea Max wanted to be out of prison to kill me.
No idea. Warden,
You have my brother back in prison now. Be charitable to him. I don't think I could have gone on much longer with a charade. A conscience, you know, is a heavy burden.
Now, Warden, you've got your man back. Could your charity also extend to the Reverend Maximus?
Yes, so. You may go, Reverend Maximus.
Oh, let me give you my business card, Warden. And you too, Reverend. Diogenes Incorporated. Anytime you're looking for the truth.
If you're ever in the neighborhood of Plymouth City and have a problem to solve, drop in at Diogenes Incorporated and give my regards to Alfredo Pinto, the half-pint ex-clown, and to Selma, the ex-lady Hercules. Who knows? I, too, may need their services someday. I'll return shortly.
Shortly.
You remember Mr. Pomfret, who loved to quote Dickens? It occurred to me it might be most apropos if I reminded him and you of those words and that warning by Mr. Pickwick. Beware, he said, of carrying brotherly love too far. Our cast included Jack Grimes, E.V. Juster, Ray Owens, and Court Benson. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre.
Macabre.
Until next time, pleasant dreams.
I'm going to jump up and down and hold my breath until it ends.
Third move.
Dredge class.
Kraft macaroni and cheese. Macaroni. Macaroni.
Don't encourage him.
That's right. Yeah, I wouldn't encourage me. It's not what. That's not. Yeah, it's not.
We have to not do that. It's not safe. It's not safe.
Nah.
The manner.
It's not safe. It's not pretty. Yeah. don't do it.
No. Okay, let me get the big broom that we use to clean up after the elephants. Just a moment. Okay, cleaning them up.
Cleaning up after Dale. Okay. Same as cleaning up after the elephants. About the same amount of crap. Hey, Duck Northwest Media joined us. And, of course, Fogs Bait and Bob have been here. Where's Bob? He was here a while ago.
Good old Bob was in here early, and then he had to check out for what it comes to. He disappeared. Yes, he did.
He misappeared.
Oh, my. He did his famous vanishing act.
There you go. We got a moral for this one?
I was just trying to think.
Think.
I guess that means no. Yeah.
All right, that's okay.
I guess so.
We got time for a lot more fun, radio and whatnot. Haven't done the wheel in a little bit.
We haven't, nor have we done the jukebox in a while. So
we've
been pretty booked up with lots of great old-time radio.
Indeed we have. So let's see.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Anyone have a pine nickel? Perhaps a Californian redwood?
A wooden nickel? I'm sure that
would burn for a while, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hold on, I'll plunk one in here.
the kind that appeals to my...
Bob, you're safer that way.
I like him.
Time was, every new record would rate a bomb.
Our songs are lucky strike extras now.
No matter, no wonder my hair is getting gray.
Yes,
it is.
Bus rides and plane hops and one-nighter train stops. Oh, we sure had our fill, didn't we, huh?
Forward the laundry, if there's a quandary.
Just send old J.D. the bill.
Seems like we made a movie not long ago.
I saw it last night on the Late Late Show.
I think I better take a powder, kid.
Oh, no, you don't. Come back here and suffer with us. Nightclubs and ballrooms, hotels with small rooms. We never knew which.
Solvent, stranded, mobbed or abandoned.
What a way to get rich.
Did you? How did he?
Well, folks, here we are back just for old time's sake. Helping to cut Jimmy's birthday cake. Remembering how time was then.
Stop, look what you're missing. Oh, how my heart sighs when you roll those great big eyes. Stop, look, you're my honey. I'll bet all my money. Everything is sunny when you roll those great big eyes. I have been from coast to coast, but my heart tells me it's you I love the most. Now stop, look, never leave me, stop, look, you're the grandest prize when you roll those great big eyes, mop, mop. Stop, look, never leave me. Stop, look, please believe me. You're the grandest prize, cause you got such great big eyes. Cause you got such great big eyes.
Yeah, a couple of good ones there.
Yep, have an all
very
time.
Nice.
Not over-orchestrated, that's for sure.
That last one reminds me of something, and I can't put my finger on it. It reminds me of another tune very much like it.
Them Their Eyes?
Yeah, it's not coming to me. That's my brain frying.
So good old Bob popped back and he was in a chat all by himself.
Oh no.
That was not necessary, Bob. We were right here.
You don't have to be lonesome here. There's plenty of fun here at Erie House.
Yes, here in this cyber circus.
This cyber circus.
Maybe
that's true.
maybe Miss CW can step up to that magic wheel of radio.
Yeah, give it a spin.
Delighted. Not afraid of heights, mind you. So here I go, across the roof, up the tree, around the trellis, and here we are, spin, spin, spin to win.
Around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Do people seem to be avoiding you? Haven't you wondered when you read the ads whether those soap things, those toothpaste things, those scalp things, horrible as they may be, are meant for you? Did you ever stop to think that even if you use those things that make a rose bush out of you, that people still may avoid you? Did you ever stop to think that possibly you're a pain in the neck? That's why you have so few. In the hopes that you realize you're a natural-born social outcast, the Gobbledygook Company presents this program. Gobbledygook makes sponsors' words. You've often heard an announcer say, and now a word from our sponsor. Where does he get that word? From the Gobbledygook Company. Among the other words made by this company are the word in... What's the good word? They make that one. The word that is always got from. You know, we just got word from Joe. Joe got his word from the Gobbledygook Company. In this country, almost every day, two people somewhere have words with each other. Words made by the Gobbledygook people. And now the Gobbledygook Company presents Word Origins. An information service for people who ain't got nothing to say. Take the word incinerator, for example. The first syllable, in, comes from the Greek word halos, which means amphitheater. This relates to the Sanskrit inlos, or fruit stand. The word for fruit stand was originally in pub, in Vulgate Latin. Later, it came, of course, to mean rotten egg. The what? Second syllable, sin, E-I-N, is from the old High German, Schweizkopf, or steam table. Now, of course, in those days, they didn't have any steam tables, so they changed the word to Vernichtungs, or Dummkopf, meaning, look stupid, this table has no steam. As the word got older, it was changed to Schnappstein. Steamless. And then it got to mean simply hot. So far, we have rotten eggs hot. The suffix erator is from the Greek word erator, meaning this is the end of the word. From that point, it's fairly easy to see how in our time incinerator came to mean incinerator instead of other things. Take the word radio telegraphy, which is two words for one thing. Reed is from the Greek god Radcliffe, god of mill hands, fire engines, and poor box thieves. Where was I? Oh, yes. From Radcliffe, we get the word cliff, or ledge, from the Roman god legerdemain, who had very slight hands. The word telegraphy is from tele, to bind with wire, or simply to wire. And graph comes from the Greek graphein, to write. From this, we got Western Union. The radio, we got from Marconi. Take the word as. A-S. This has a fascinating history, or entomology, if you're talking about bugs. Originally, the word was Fastambangloth. Famous statesman who later went to Norway. From his name we get bang, loud noise. Loth, which doesn't mean anything and so isn't used much anymore. And frost, which word, frost, children still use when speaking of frozen dew. Frost.
If I've been able to help in any way, I'm glad.
What you talking about, Will? Boosting. There's your ego boosting morale.
Yep.
Yes.
Wow.
Interesting. Henry Morgan, very interesting way to break down the origin of words, yes.
Yes.
All coming to you courtesy of the Gobbledygook Company. I like that.
Okay, that song, I told you it reminded me of something. I know what it is. With the violin and the jazz beat, it was the song that the Three Stooges were playing in disorder in the court.
Oh, well, yeah, okay. I can see that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It took me a minute to sink in. I'm getting old. But that's what it reminded me of.
You know, I just heard last night a 1971 radio interview with Mo Howard. And as much as I thought I might have known about the Three Stooges, I didn't. It's just absolutely enthralling hearing Mo in 1971 talk about the Stooges and their origin and when he started in films. Mo started as a child in like 1905 in films. I had no idea.
Yeah. He had a long, long history, even before I think he met
Ted Healy, yeah.
Healy, who got the boys together originally. Oh, man, what a great group they were.
Yeah, but wow, that Ted Healy, what a pit viper.
He had problems. He had demons. He did.
And he kind of paid for it at the end, too. Didn't he get beaten to death or something?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
And Wallace Beery, I think, was a suspect. Or has been thought of as.
Wallace Beery, not junior, but senior?
I think so.
Ooh. This is a mystery I've never heard of.
Yeah, there is some mystery around the death of Ted Healy. And I don't believe it's fully solved. He was found beaten.
It was one that I don't think they wanted solved. Many times that I think sometimes that does happen. They don't, you know, when you have celebrities in there and you would involve other, that's why they were letting Fatty Arbuckle take the fall for something that he wasn't really responsible for, and he pay for it.
Yeah, Arbuckle was ruined, showbiz-wise.
Yeah. It's hard to know,
the Patsy.
I don't think they ever really... Well, something bad happened in that room, that's for darn certain. I mean,
I know
the actress Virginia Rappe, I believe that was her name.
Yes.
And
but the biggest
the alcohol
one that started
was flowing.
The biggest one that started the damaging rumors was a blackmailer who also did kind of a scandal sheet type thing.
Yeah.
And when Arbuckle wouldn't pay him off, he became the big target. And he was a big target. He was big everything.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
That's like the Superman. That's like the Superman thing. George Reeves.
Oh yeah.
Reeves.
That's one nobody wanted solved.
Right. Even though that's why they wanted to call it a suicide, which it was not.
No.
But you know what? When you screw around with a mob boss's woman,
funny things are going to happen.
Funny things are going to happen. It ain't laughable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
No kidding. That reminds me of a little bit of a quick tale, if I might regale you.
Regale away.
We're talking about the mob. As we all know, the magnificent actress Lana Turner, for some inexplicable reason, took a liking to a chap by the name of Johnny Stompanato, who was part of the crew, the mob. Mm-hmm. Well, he was behaving in a very ungentlemanly-like manner, where up comes this big, wide-shouldered, good-looking young chap who takes them aside and gives them what for. This guy was a very young Sean Connery. Sean Connery, yeah. Sean Connery was then told, well, this Johnny Stompanato is with a particular group of people you don't want to mess around with. He had the wherewithal to get out of town post-haste, which is why he outlived all of them.
Mm-hmm. Hey, CW, I know you like exploring great women, okay? I got one for you. And it's kind of like, here's the rest of the story. It's an incredible but mostly unknown story. In 1933, a beautiful young Austrian woman took off her clothes for a movie director. She ran through the woods naked. She swam in a lake naked. Pushing well beyond the social norms of the period, the most popular movie in 1933 was King Kong, but everyone in Hollywood was talking about that scandalous movie with the gorgeous young Austrian woman. Louis B. Mayer, one of the great MGM studio giants, said she was the most beautiful woman in the world. The film was banned practically everywhere, which of course made it even more popular and valuable. Mussolini himself reportedly refused to sell his copy at any price. The star of the film called Ecstasy was Hedwig Kiesler. She said the secret of her beauty was to stand there and look stupid. In reality, Kiesler was anything but stupid. She was a genius. She'd grown up as the only child of a prominent Jewish banker. She was a math prodigy, excelled at science. And as she grew older, she became ruthless, using all the power her body and mind gave her. Between the sexual roles she played, her tremendous beauty and the power of her intellect, Kiesler would confound the men in her life, which included her 6 husbands and 2 of the most ruthless dictators of the 20th century, and one of the greatest movie producers in history. Her beauty made her rich for a time. She is said to have made and spent $30 million in her life. Now think of it. That's back then. We need a Garculator.
Wow. I tell you.
But her greatest accomplishment resulted from her intellect, and her invention continues to shape the world we live in today. You see, this young Austrian starlet would take one of the most valuable technologies ever developed right from under Hitler's nose. After fleeing to America, she not only became a major Hollywood star, her name still sits on one of those most important patents ever granted by the U.S. Patent Office. Today, when you use your cell phone, or over the next few years as you experience super fast wireless internet access via something called long-term evolution or LTE technology, you'll be using an extension of the technology a 20-year-old actress first conceived while sitting at dinner with Hitler. At the time she made Ecstasy, Kaiser was married to one of the richest men in Austria, Friedrich Mandl. He was Austria's leading arms maker. His firm would become a key supplier to the Nazis. He used his beautiful young wife as a showpiece at important business dinners with representatives of Austrian, Italian, and German fascist forces. One of Mandel's favorite topics at these gatherings, which included meals with Hitler and Mussolini, was the technology surrounding radio-controlled missiles and torpedoes. Wireless weapons offered far greater ranges than the wired-controlled alternatives that prevailed at the time. Kiesler sat to these dinners looking stupid while absorbing everything she heard. As a Jew, Kiesler hated the Nazis. She abhorred her husband's business ambitions. Mandel responded to his willful wife by imprisoning her in his castle. In 1937, she managed to escape. She drugged her maid, snuck out of the castle wearing the maid's clothes, and sold her jewelry to finance a trip to London. She got out just in time. In 1938, Germany annexed Austria. The Nazis seized Mandel's factory. He was half Jewish. Mandel fled to Brazil, later became an advisor to Argentina's populist president, Juan Perón. Jeez, there's a lot of people in this. In London, Kiesler arranged a meeting with Louis B. Mayer. She signed a long-term contract with him, became one of MGM's biggest stars. She appeared in more than 20 films. She was a co-star to Clark Gable, Judy Garland, and even Bob Hope. I'll bet Dave knows who it is by now.
I do.
I bet you do. Each of her first seven MGM movies was a blockbuster, but Kaiser cared far more about fighting the Nazis than making movies. At the height of her fame in 1942, she developed a new kind of communication system optimized for sending coded messages that couldn't be jammed. See, back then, I guess they used a single frequency radio and it was easier to jam them. She created something through an association with a techno musician, the world's first techno musician, George Antheil. He was an acquaintance of Kaiser, who achieved some notoriety for creating intricate musical compositions and synchronized his melodies across player pianos, producing stereophonic sounds no one had ever heard before. Kaiser incorporated that technology for synchronizing his player pianos, and she was able to synchronize the frequency changes between a weapons receiver and its transmitter. In other words, making targeted missiles that wouldn't be jammed. How about that? You would name as her recognized name Kaiser. No one would remember the name Hetty Markey. I think we know now. But it's a fair bet that anyone reading the Post of a certain age will remember one of the greatest beauties of Hollywood's golden age, Hetty Lamarr. That's the name Louis B. Mayer gave to his prize actress. Yeah. So even this very day, you're probably using her technology. It sits at the foundation of spread spectrum technology, which you use every day when you log into Wi-Fi or make calls with your Bluetooth. It lies at the heart of massive instruments being made right now in a so-called fourth generation LTE wireless technology, which my phone says all the time when I can't get the internet. Anyway, this kind of encoding is only possible using the kind of frequency switching that Hedwig Kaiser invented. And now you know the rest of the story.
Every time I suck the grid dry of Wi-Fi at the restaurants around me, I will think of Ms. Lamarr.
Yeah, she was she was an extremely attractive lady.
Yeah. I bet she could really get Wi-Fi. Wow. So the spirit of Hetty, the spirit of Hetty Lamarr, where's the best Wi-Fi? Direct me, Ms. Lamarr. I'm using my Ouija.
Because I want to see the
what's
movie.
What's happening next week on Erie House Radio, Dale?
Static. Nothing but static weekend long. I was gonna close everything down, but I caved in. In fact, that's what we're doing, cave-ins. Suspense, Theater 5, and The Sealed Book on Friday, and another CBS Radio Mystery Theater, yay, on Saturday. Mm-hmm. So we'll be getting caved in.
Cool.
Avalanche, cool. Very nice. And so everybody bring your your helmets and your spelunking gear. We're going into the caves.
Yep, extra batteries.
It is very fun to spelunk. We got a very special ending tonight. Hopefully I can find it. There it is. There we go. So we want to thank Hogsbane, good old Bob, and Duck Northwest Media for joining us today for some old time radio. We'll be back for more. Gar the Ghoul coming up in about a minute and 20 seconds over on the Twitches. Check him out. And thank you, folks. Good night.
Mike, let me tell you something. The whole world is a circus if you know how to look at it. The way the sun goes down when you're tired, comes up when you want to be on the move, that's real magic. The way a leaf grows, the song of the birds, the way the desert looks at night, with the moon embracing it. Oh, my boy, that's circus enough for anyone. Every time you watch a rainbow and feel wonder in your heart, every time you pick up a handful of dust and see not the dust, but a mystery, a marvel there in your hand. Every time you stop and think, I'm alive, and being alive is fantastic. Every time such a thing happens, you're part of the circus of Dr. Lowe.
I don't understand.
Neither do I.
go. How do you like that?
Words of wisdom.
Yes. My daughter made a piece of art that had a good deal of that quote on it for me once. I think my kids were glad I introduced them to that film because it's neat. I love that character, Dr. Lull. And he was like, he would have a thick Asian accent, and then all of a sudden he'd be speaking just like Tony Randall. But it was deliberate. It was part of the story. It wasn't like, you know, an acting faux pas. It was what was supposed to happen. People were like, hey, what happened to your accent, dude? And all the different roles he played, it was just magical. Plus, you got Barbara Eden.
Oh, absolutely.
A very good film.
Very classical. Yep. I may have to look that up tonight, as well as The Mystery of Ted Healy.
Yes. That will be a good one for you to research. It's been so many years, it would be hard to really determine, but it seems to lean towards maybe somebody in Hollywood was involved with that.
That's why they didn't want to have the answer to that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh, are we in the after party now?
Yes.
We are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, swearing is allowed now, so.
Oh, okay. Okay. Why, you no good.
And if anybody deserves that, it's me.
I do have a complaint to make about today's political correctness.
Uh-oh.
It is no longer the Oscar Minor Wiener Mobile.
Oh, no.
It's the Oscar Minor Frank Mobile. Who the hell calls them Frankfurters? Everybody calls them hot dogs and wiener.
Yeah, I don't even think people in Germany say Frankfurter anymore.
Except in
people Frankfurt. Say Frankfurter.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say the Oscar Mayer tube steak.
Oh, wow.
Well, it's
wow.
For the, I heard that in some radio play, and I asked around in my part of the galaxy, what's a tube stick?
Oh, wow.
Nobody knew, so I went to the intranet, and it told me it's just another name for a wiener, a frankfurter, a hot dog. It's a tube stick.
Oh.
Right. My dad used to call them tube sticks. That was the only steaks he would buy.
I've heard a completely different usage for that term.
I am blushing
like you would not believe.
Yeah, I've never heard that except for somebody who only knows dirty meanings of everything.
No, there was a song by ZZ Top called The Tube Steak Boogie.
Oh, yep. My gosh. Well, happily, the search engine I used omitted that.
Well, my youth didn't have that either. But what I did do is there's a neat little 18-minute YouTube documentary I just put up in the group chat. And My Name is Roscoe. It's an 18-minute documentary on Fatty Arbuckle.
Yeah. Oh, my God. He was a huge star. Yeah. And he was brought down low.
Even though the first $1 million a year stars.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
He
the
went,
thing about
went to the wrong
of
party.
All stars that, well, he threw it.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
It was his party. And quite frankly, wasn't prohibition in place then yet?
Yes. Yes,
probably.
Cared.
Not in Hollywood.
Okay.
They didn't have to.
Not in Hollywood. Oh, please.
Yep.
Anyone wanted a glass of gin, they went out to their swimming pool.
Yes.
Yeah.
Have Jeeves bring it on over with a pool boy.
Yes. Yes, geez. Can I get some gin? What? Oh, we'll go to the next door neighbor and get some from their pool. Oh. So,
has the pool boy become something with an umbrella on it?
Yeah, but yeah, I'll take a look at that documentary, and definitely I'm going to delve into this Ted Healy mystery. The thing about mysteries, I mean, a lot of people don't want to find out what happened, but sometimes when you get a really good investigator who doesn't like mysteries, who doesn't like things left wide open,
yeah,
that's on the rare occasion, someone who can't, you know, you can't slip them a few sawbucks to say, just look the other way.
Yeah, go away. Here's $1,000, go away.
Yeah. I mean, fortunately, there are some investigators of that kinship who just got to keep scratching the surface.
Like Kolchak.
Kolchak, Night Stalker, yeah.
Just like Kolchak.
Investigative reporters, yeah. And there was one mystery that was kind of sort of solved. What was the name of the director shot in his house?
Yes, that was also a long time ago.
William. Yes.
I saw something about that, a special on that on YouTube.
Yeah, King Vidor, who was a director, wrote a book about it, putting his spin on who he thought was the killer.
Mm-hmm.
Found out it when he was off. I mean, this guy had a lot of skeletons in his closet. Everybody had a lot of skeletons in the closet. But it turned out the best suspects were the actress Mary Miles Minter. Either she did it, or more probably her backstage mother did it.
Yeah.
Bang, bang.
Hmm.
And talk about the Keystone Cops. I mean, everybody was walking over evidence and whatnot. Not that they had any real forensic things. It was far from being NCIS.
Huh.
Here, let me just do the laundry and scrub the floors and dust the furniture and move the body over here and clean up all that blood and put it back over there.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know these mysteries. These mysteries. I'm never quite 100% certain.
Yeah.
And
that. not just the big ones like Kennedy. There's always been some uncertainty about his assassination, and there's been some on Lincoln too.
Oh yes. I mean, was it really John Wilkes Booth that they cornered in that barn? And
there was some doubt about that. Yep.
About that, and the doctor who took care of his broken limb, Dr. Mudd, did he know that he had assassinated Lincoln? Was he a conspirator or just a doctor doing a doctor's job? And then later on found out. Remember, everything traveled by either word of mouth or mail, and word of mouth was faster, like it is today. Ooh.
Yeah.
Did all the postal workers just come after me now? Ooh, sorry.
Too bad.
Well, it's that same evening. I just can't imagine that he would have gotten a word, being as far away from Washington as he was, that had happened.
Yeah.
That's true. Some people are of the opinion he may have known beforehand, and he was on the route for his Booth escape route. That's one of the reasons why they locked him up in jail. I think he still has relatives who are still trying to get his record expunged.
I don't know. There was a very good Ray Bradbury Theater about, what was his name? Oh, gosh, he was on WKRP, the hippie. He was in it as like the curator.
Howard Hessman?
Yeah, Howard Hessman.
Dr. Fever?
Yeah, Howard Hessman was in it. He was like the curator of a museum, and they had a one of those automated president things of Lincoln, and some guy dressed up as John Wilkes Booth and, you know, shot the animatronic Lincoln, and it was really weird. And Howard Hessman lost his head over it. It was funny. It was a good story.
Wow.
Bradbury writes such good stuff.
Oh, and that was Ray Bradbury Theater?
Yeah, it was on Ray Bradbury Theater.
We did our own Lincoln story on the radio stage that we shared here, where a guy went back in time to save Lincoln, and he did save Lincoln from the theater, but Lincoln, what happened is Lincoln fell down the stairs and broke his neck at the White House and died at the exact same time he would have died from the gunshot wound.
Ah. And then he ended up on Gilligan's Island.
No.
That's a different... did you get that reference at all?
I did.
Russell Johnson was in the Twilight Zone about going back and
forth. He was. That episode of Twilight Zone called Back There was what inspired us to write our story. What would happen if he would have actually saved Lincoln? And so we came up with the diary we called the story History Was on My Side. Because knowing history, he knew what he could do to avoid it. But what they didn't take into effect is, so the radio play was kind of a story built around this diary, because the diary itself wasn't. The guy finally admitted that fate cannot be denied her victories or her victims. That was
interesting. I think there was in the reboot of Twilight Zone, I think they redid something akin to that, where you have time travel historians. They go and observe events. And I forgot the name of the actor. Lane Smith, or anyway, he's a time historian.
It wasn't a movie with Keanu Reeves, was it?
Nope, not that one.
Well, that's one thing this guy realized, that he could not change history, because whatever he changed is what history became. Some people didn't know that Lincoln was supposed to be shot. That in the present day, they knew that Lincoln had just fallen down the stairs and broken his neck, you know, because they did not know that originally he was supposed to be shot, because he had changed history, and that's what history became. So to go this premise that they constantly have, that you're going to go back in history to change something, doesn't do that, because that's what history becomes.
Yeah. So it sort of conquers the premise that you'll become your own grandpa.
I don't know. Time travel carries so many paradoxes.
It's great for story writing, if nothing else.
True.
It's great. It's fantastic. Yeah.
Gives you freedom to do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Time travel and zombies.
That's the beauty of science fiction.
Let me find that real quick. It's not the one I want. Find it real quick. People can go back in the archive. They're listening to the archives.
He's going back in time.
It was from the show of November the 9th of 2018. story was called, the story was called The Footnote, and they were, it was Saving Abe Lincoln Night.
Wow.
So Mysterious Traveler, and then the WCRS radio stage, The Footnote. And I actually, I had my brother call in, and being the brave soul my brother is, he had forgotten anything and everything about that story and about doing the story. I said, really? You were like basically the lead in that story and you forgot being in it and how it went and how it came out. And I sent him a copy of the story ahead of time of the audio and he didn't listen to it. And so what's funny is that I was remembering that at the time we recorded this. He didn't. I do. But he was sitting down with my two sons telling them how historically correct so many of the facts we had written into this story was. And he was impressed by some of the historical references that we used in there. The
well
times,
done.
The dates, the places, the names. He was pretty impressed in telling my sons that, and then he doesn't even remember it. I swear.
Excuse me.
It's not like it wasn't 18 years before or anything. Oh, yeah, it was 18 years mm-hmm. before.
Oh, okay. Selective memory. He probably
yep.
remembers, hey, Dave, don't you owe me some money? Or
you're my brother. I don't remember that thing. Yeah. Like, you didn't remember being in the radio show. That's it. My grousing is over.
Gentlemen, I must be away, but I'm happy to fulfill my final duty of the evening, if I may.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. As Gar puts on an episode of Johnny Quest.
Mr. Durante, hurry, hurry. Johnny Quest is on.
Oh, well, we got to... He's twitchulating. All right, here's the schnoz.
Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Aribo, up we the same, and ink
I do. Think I do, yeah.
Good night. Night. Good night, folks, and good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
He's in Buckhead, Wyoming.
The foregoing has made it obvious to me that we've had quite enough for one evening. We shall save the rest until next week when I shall reappear. Until then, good night.